My name is Martina Cole. I'm a crime author. The nature of true crime often defies understanding or logic. And in my opinion, the most difficult perpetrators of crime to work out are the women that murder time and time again. In this series, I'll be shining a light on six of the most prolific female mass murderers in history. So welcome to the dark world of the Lady Killers.
Conspiracy of witches.
Download Veely today.
In this programme, I'm delving into the sordid world of sexual sadism and focusing on one of the world's most notorious serial killers, Rose West. In 1994, Rose West and her husband Fred came to the world's attention when the bodies of several young women were discovered buried underneath their house at number 25 Cromwell Street in Gloucester. An extraordinary case unfolded before our very eyes as we discovered that Rose West, a dumpy housewife and mother of eight, had been living the life of a murderous sexual sadist alongside of her husband, Fred. Fred West would never be tried for his part in these murders as he killed himself whilst on remand in January 1995. Later that year, Rosemary West was convicted of the murders of 10 women, crimes to which she has never admitted. But I'm not here to try and prove or disprove Rosemary West's guilt. I just want to understand what could have led her down the dark path towards a sordid world of sexual torture.
Most sexual sadists are psychopathic. They know no rules, no boundaries, and they have no conscience.
The underlying motivation for sadism is usually one of control and an actual sexual pleasure in inflicting pain.
Most sadistic sexual crimes are committed by men, you know, so Rose is very, very unusual.
Frederick West is the man who lit the fire. Frederick West is the person who gains enormous pleasure from seeing his protege become his successor.
The killing capabilities of Fred and Rose hit the headlines in the 1990s. But their sordid sexual behaviour was nothing new. I've come to meet the West's former nanny, Caroline Roberts, who became one of their early victims when she was subjected to a serious sexual assault after they picked her up whilst hitchhiking back in 1972.
We started actually fighting in the back of the car, and a couple of seconds later he pulled up on the side of the road, turned around in the driver's seat and just kept punching me in the side of the head until I was knocked out. I was pushed into the footwell of the car and they drove back to 25 Cromwell Street.
It was a squalid house, squalid in the sexual sense. It was full of sexual paraphernalia, pornography, peepholes, holes in the walls to look into bedrooms and bathrooms. And then there's this very sinister cellar, which is a torture chamber.
The girls were taken down there. They were tied up, probably suspended from the hooks and just treated as Fred and Rose's sexual playthings.
Clearly, in the relationship between Fred and Rose, it was not one of sadism and masochism. It was a case of two sadists, and they were in need of victims.
He was saying, like, that they were going to keep me in the cellar and they're going to let their friends use me, and then when they finish me, kill me and bury me where there were hundreds of other girls under the pavement stones of Gloucester.
They do it in their own home over a very long period of time. It's as if Myra Hindley and Ian Brady kept going for another 20 years.
In 1994, the true extent of the West's sexual crimes only came to light after Gloucester Social Services became concerned about the welfare of their missing daughter, Heather.
There was this family joke that Heather was buried under the patio.
Journalist Howard Soons spoke to several members of the family in order to try and find the truth behind the headlines.
They used to joke about it, that she was sort of two squares up and three across, like a crossword.
The police were informed that their investigation focused on the garden of 25 Cromwell Street, the home of local builder Fred West and his wife Rose.
They were looking for just Heather West. They felt there were sufficient grounds to dig up the garden, and that's who they were looking for.
But while the concrete slabs were still being removed from the garden, Fred West made a shocking confession to the police.
And he said, "I did kill Heather, and she is under the patio, and I'll show you where she is."
So this is 25 Cromwell Street.
The original property, the original number 25, would have been there. The extension where the bathroom was where would have been here.
Yeah.
And then we had the patio, and then, of course, the garden where three sets of remains.
And, of course, this is where Heather was found,
yes.
Isn't it?
Yes.
What was it like when the story broke, when you first arrived here?
Well, when the story first broke, we thought it was just a story,
Someone had killed their daughter.
Exactly.
Which was bad enough in itself.
Of course. And then over the days and weeks, the whole thing really spiralled almost out of control.
Gloucester police say they believe they've found the remains,
the remains of two more bodies
at a house
have been
in the city.
Three bodies have already been
murdering five more
examine
women.
Examine a ninth body
two
uncovered.
Further murders.
Tenth body uncovered during this investigation.
The part that always gets to me was on the TV footage. You know, those black plastic boxes that the police officers in overalls were bringing out. The black boxes equals murder victim. That'll always be a picture in my mind.
Eventually, the remains of 12 young women were discovered at Cromwell Street and at three other sites. After Fred West hanged himself before the trial, his wife, Rose, was convicted of 10 counts of murder, including that of her own child, Heather.
I mean, to kill your own daughter, and for a mother to kill her own daughter, this is really what makes the West story remarkable. The fact that it's man and wife acting together.
Britain was shocked and outraged that a woman could commit such hideous crimes.
There is, a rather old-fashioned myth that because men are so clearly more violent than women to other people, that somehow women are innately better or less destructive.
People still find it appallingly difficult to say, what? A woman could do that? And the sad thing is, yes, of course she can, in the right context, in the right circumstances.
I felt more repulsed by Rose, because it was a woman, it was a friend, it was a mother, you know, a nurturing figure. You don't expect that from a woman. I still don't think there's many women in the world today that have been accused of what she's done.
Rose West will spend the rest of her life in prison, but who is the real woman behind the headlines? And what could have turned this beautiful young girl into Britain's most prolific modern-day female serial killer? As a writer, it's part and parcel of my job to really understand what drives my characters. And in this series, I'm applying that thought process to real life. We tend to think of women as mothers and homemakers, as nurturing carers. But clearly something goes wrong with some women and they end up as the lady killers. The case of Fred and Rose West has become a model for those who study criminal behaviour. And I've looked towards those people who have not only studied the case, but who have met family members and friends to help me piece together the truth of what happened. My investigation starts in November 1995, when after her husband Fred had committed suicide in prison, Rose West, a mother of eight, was convicted of the murders of 10 young women, including her own daughter, Heather.
Fred and Rose West are probably one of the worst cases of serial murder in the history of mankind.
How would I describe Fred and Rose West? Sordid, barbaric, bestial, evil.
Fred and Rose West's crimes were deeply horrific. It's bad enough for us to think of a man committing such brutal, sadistic murders. But a woman? Somehow that seems a lot more shocking. It intrigues me how lady killers like Rose West come to exist. Is it because of what happens to someone during their early life? I'm not so sure it is. I personally think that some people might just be born bad. Rosemary Letts was born on the 29th of November 1953 in Devon. She was the fifth child of electrician Bill Letts and his wife Daisy. Daisy spoke at some length to journalist Howard Soons during the course of the investigation.
Rose's mother described Bill to me as the heller, H-E-L-L-E-R, he was hell to live with.
Apparently he was an absolute tyrant. He would have his daughters cleaning the carpet with toothbrushes.
Daisy told me he would beat them up, throw things, hit them with anything, bang the children's heads against the wall.
There's absolutely no mistake that mental illness was quite rife in Rose's parents. I mean, Bill was schizophrenic and hid it, and he was profoundly obsessive-compulsive. Her mother, Daisy, possibly was deeply depressed, and I would imagine Rose will have inherited something.
As a young girl, Rose was apparently slower than other children of her age, and she earned the nickname Dozy Rosie. And it seems that while her father habitually beat the rest of the family, he did not hit Rose.
For some reason, he kind of took to Rose. Maybe it was because she was a little less intelligent, she was almost slow, but it's a strong theme in a lot of the anecdotal stories about the family that he favoured Rose. We don't know, we'll never know, but maybe he was attracted to Rose in some way.
When you're abused as a young child and they're what your norms are, the things, you know, that you grow up with, well, then how can we expect them to behave and function as healthy, normal human beings?
Although we may never know the true nature of the abuse that Rose received at home, she would later claim that in her early teens she was raped twice by older men. What we do know is that by the end of her school years, at the age of 16, Rose was sexually precocious, and she seemed to have discovered a preference for the older and the more experienced man. This would lead her to meet soon-to-be partner in crime, 27-year-old father of two, Fred West.
Fred seems to have picked up Rose in the way that he picked up many of his later victims. Fred came along, gave her a lift, and they just seemed to hit it off.
Her mum told me the story about Rose's first impression of Fred was that he had green, ganky teeth, because Fred was famously dirty. He was a kind of slovenly Steptoe and Son type man. But Rose, you know, she was very young, of course, impressionable, and she fell for him.
He was always on about sex, and he was always, like, grabbing only Rose and in a sexy way.
Yeah.
And that was quite uncomfortable for me to witness, but I used to just laugh it off.
If you don't mind me asking, how did Rose react to that when he did that to her in front of
people? Oh, giggle.
I mean, she didn't mind.
No, she didn't stop him, she just giggled.
I think that Frederick West liberates and shapes and forms the direction that Rosemary West's sexuality is going to develop. Remember, she comes as a woman with probably strong appetites, but the direction not really determined. I think she, in her young days, has learned that if you do things that people like sexually, you don't get hurt so much.
If you accept that Fred was of a mindset where he was looking for girls, looking for sex, looking to take what he could get by, usually by rough means, and if Rose is happy to go along with that, it's no surprise that they meshed. Fred probably couldn't believe his luck.
What I want to know is, did Fred and Rose's combined perverted sexual appetites actually cause them to feed off each other?
And there's certainly something about the two of them. He unlocks something in her, without a doubt. Everything that she knows is about violence and abuse. He continues that relationship, and I think there is something about that behaviour escalating because the two of them are together and they start to create their own fantasy world.
This couple were polymorphously perverse, so there were lots of things they were into. I think the word, I don't know, it's my own sort of phrase, I sometimes think of couples like this almost as malignant couples.
If you've got the combination of two people with that kind of predilection and two people who have also got the brakes removed to some degree as human beings, it's a very dangerous combination.
When Rose moved into Fred's caravan in March 1970, his influence on her immediately became apparent.
Fred basically pimps Rose. She's a whore for Fred. It's the story of prostitution, isn't it? You do what you're asked to do, and you get used to it. And so some men like bondage, some men like sadism, some men like to watch. All of this becomes part of her world.
At just 16, Rose fell pregnant. Fred West moved his growing family out of the caravan and into a ground floor flat at 25 Midland Road.
The key thing is that Fred wasn't there. Fred was in prison for some petty theft.
Pregnant with her own baby, Rose was left alone to look after Fred's children from his first marriage, daughter Anne-Marie and his stepdaughter, Charmaine.
At the risk of sounding sympathetic for Rose, it must have been pretty awful for her. Rose is left in the house, sort of running the house, and with two young children, one of whom, Charmaine, we're told is fairly willful, fairly belligerent.
Charmaine was the more difficult of the two children. She was not compliant and was continually disagreeing with an obstructive, as a young child, to what was her stepmother.
It seems that Rose beat them. Now, at some point, chastising them, trying to keep order, seems to have tipped over into a sort of perverse beating, a sexual beating. There was sadistic behaviour from a young age.
Rose's beatings of the girls, and Charmaine in particular, were regular occurrences. But in June 1971, while Fred was still in prison, the situation at Midland Road reached breaking point. And Charmaine West disappeared.
Rose tells people that her mum, Rena, has come and picked her up, as she always said she would, frankly, and taken her away to live with her. And people take that at face value.
Of course, we now know that she didn't go away because her remains were found beneath the floor at 25 Midland Road.
She was murdered, she was dismembered, and she was buried at the West's flat. So the question is, who murdered her? Well, Fred was in prison. So that's why the police believe that Rose murdered Charmaine, probably in a fit of temper.
So what do you think happened when Fred finally got out of prison?
Well, Fred came out of prison. Rose would have had to have confessed that she'd killed Charmaine.
Yeah.
Whether there was any remorse or not, I think that's doubtful because of the person that we know that Rose was.
Yeah.
I think at that point Fred was able, if he hadn't already confessed to the fact that he'd killed himself, in fact he'd murdered his former nanny, Annie McFall, who was expecting his baby, and buried her here in these fields.
And then, of course, once she kills Charmaine, I think that puts them on an even, sort of like an even keel together, doesn't it? They both know what they're capable of.
It's a relationship.
It's become like an unholy alliance,
hasn't
it, between them, yeah.
Yeah.
Charmaine may not have been Fred's only experience of death and burial, but she was more than likely Rose's first victim. Most people believe the story she and Fred told about Charmaine, but one person couldn't be fooled. And in August 1971, Charmaine's mother, Rena Costello, came looking for her daughter.
Rena did come looking, and of course that was her undoing. Fred and Rose were happy to keep their secrets, but Fred couldn't allow Rena to go free because there was no reason for Rena not to go to the police if she suspected what had really happened to Charmaine.
You could imagine that them saying, well, she's at my mother's over in Muchmarkle. We'll go out there. Because somehow or another, Rena dies somewhere and is buried at Muchmarkle.
Rena Costello was buried in the very next field to Fred's previous victim, Anna McFall, the very same farmland in Much Markle, where he grew up as a boy.
I think he picked this tree because I think he could pick it out from the road or from the field. It's quite a big tree and it's on its own, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he probably drove past this an awful lot. It was like a reminder to him of where his first wife was. It's just sad. And they got away with it. And there's no better incentive than getting away with something to make you want to do it again.
Just months after the murder of Rena Costello, the West family moved to a new home, 25 Cromwell Street, and hired 16-year-old Caroline Owens to be their nanny. At first, all seemed well in her new home, but soon Caroline began to have doubts about her employers.
One day after tea, Fred asked me about joining his sex circle, and I said, "What do you want about sex circle?" And he said, "Well, Rose and me and a few other people, we got this sex circle and we all get together. We have sex and stuff like that." Mm. And I said, "No, I'm not interested in all that."
Uneasy, Caroline left Cromwell Street without telling the Wests. But a couple of weeks later, when she was hitchhiking, a familiar car pulled up.
Fancy lift? All right.
Fred was, like, looking at me in the rearview mirror. And he just suddenly asked me if I'd had sex with my boyfriend that night. And he said, "Go and have a look, Rose." And Rose, with that, just, like, grabbed out of my crotch. And, of course, my reflex was to, like, smack her hand away. And we ended up fighting.
Fred stopped the car and knocked Caroline unconscious. When she came round, her hands were tied and she was bundled into a bedroom on the first floor of Cromwell Street.
They tried to calm me down, and Fred kind of said, "We'll have a cup of tea and we'll clean you up and then we're going to take you home." So I kind of thought I was going to be all right, so I was doing as I was told. And then the next thing, Rose just grabs hold of me and tries to kiss me on the mouth.
Caroline desperately fought back as she was stripped and gagged.
Then Rose started, like, touching me, and Fred was watching. And then there was a sexual assault that went on for quite a while. I was absolutely petrified by then. It definitely was there for her pleasure. Rose was the one doing all the sexual assaulting, whereas he was one that was doing most of the beating. At some point, Fred said to Rose, "You know, go down and see it to the kids." About 5 minutes after she went, he was stood over me looking at me, and he just suddenly, like, pulled his jeans back off and just raped me. After he raped me, he started crying, which I found really, really strange.
Yeah.
And he said, "I shouldn't have done that. Don't tell Rose that I've touched you, that I've done that, because if she knows, she's going to kill us both." Yeah.
For Fred, that may well have upped the ante, you know, seeing the fear in the victim's eyes and Caroline's eyes, telling her that there's every chance that she could be killed. That's all part of where the pleasure comes from, and seeing that suffering, being able to dominate and violate someone, that's what they enjoy doing.
It was just weird that they'd do something sexual, and at one point they were having sex as well as doing things to me, and then they'd just stop and say, "Right, let's have a cup of tea."
They had this technique which is seen in, you know, interrogations. It's the hot cold. I mean, for them, there was no purpose to continuing being sadistic and the sexual molestation ad infinitum, because you're, as it were, flogging a dead horse eventually.
One day you could say, "Oh, it's all right here, have a bath, comb your hair, have some tea, it's all been a big mistake." And you can see the, "Oh, thank goodness, come back." And then suddenly, it's gone again. And all of these things become part of the pleasure package that drives these people on.
After a 12-hour ordeal, Fred and Rose finally let Caroline go when she lied that she would return as their nanny. The Wests were arrested, but Caroline was unable to face the prospect of giving evidence in court. So despite never having to face the charge of rape, Fred and Rose were fined £100 each for the crimes of assault occasioning actual bodily harm and of indecent assault.
She had gone to the police, which could have been a disaster, but by luck, really, they kind of got away with it. And I think they'd made the decision that next time they couldn't let the girl get away.
I think Fred and Rose West had realised that the only way to ensure that these poor young women could not report the crimes against them was to make sure that they stayed silent forever. I'm piecing together as much of Rose's life as I can to try to discover what could make a mother become such a cold-blooded killer. And inevitably, I've been retracing the steps that she took during the murders.
Feels really strange driving around these roads, knowing that they were used as the hunting grounds by Fred and Rose for nearly a quarter of a century.
In 1972, the West narrowly escaped prison after the assault of their 16-year-old nanny, Caroline Owens. By abducting the teenager and bringing her back to their home, the West had begun the process of turning 25 Cromwell Street into the house of their fantasies.
I think Cromwell Street gave them security and stability and the means to be able to do what they wanted to do, which was act out their fantasy.
Fred particularly wanted his own home base where he felt secure in order to torture, in order to be sadistic, and in order to carry out those activities without someone looking.
They created a sort of a torture dungeon environment where they can do whatever they want, and that's the point where the fantasy, you know, really starts to be acted out.
Rose continued to work as a prostitute, and the West took lodgers to help pay the mortgage.
I would think of Fred and Rose throwing open the door, appearing to be welcoming hosts, doors always open, come on in, sex on tap, possibly drink and drugs on tap. Now, if you were of a certain age, you would find that very attractive.
There were items that showed clearly that sexual activity took place there regularly. There were items such as whips and leather clothing, rubber clothing, a bar with optics, and as well as that, there were intercoms, and these were relayed back down to the kitchen area, which basically meant that you could hear what was going on in the bedrooms back down in the kitchen area.
You can certainly say that Fred was industrious as far as the cellar was concerned. I mean, he'd actually dug it out to lower the level of the floor to make it bigger. That can't have been easy. But then you consider the beams with the holes and the hooks drilled in, and then you get a much more sort of sinister insight into what was intended down there.
These are real signs of sexual sadism, you know, creating this kind of torture dungeon, probably, you know, having some form of tape recording what's gone on, or keeping souvenirs or keeping certain things back to remind them of what they've done. But they certainly need to create, if they know they want to spend time with the victim, they need to create the environment that allows that to happen.
The depravity of the West's actions would take a terrible turn when 8-year-old Anne-Marie was led down into the cellar by her father and stepmother.
They raped their daughter. Anne-Marie said in court that, at least at one stage, Mum held her down while Dad had sex with her. So you have to, that's important to bear in mind, that Rose is very active in this. And then, frankly, they pimped their daughter. Rose made her daughter work as a prostitute.
The abuse of their own children follows on to some degree from their own childhoods and their own upbringing, where this was kind of acceptable and almost seen as normal practice.
As a mother, I just can't get my head around the idea of abusing my child. And even though Anne-Marie was Rose's stepdaughter, I can still make no sense of her actions at all. But the most awful thing for me is that they didn't stop at Anne-Marie. Three other of Fred and Rose's children, Heather, May and Stephen, would also find themselves on the receiving end of their parents' physical and mental violence.
From the kids' point of view, they're put up with whatever it is in that situation because they don't know anything different. They haven't lived another life, so they don't know anything different to that. And perhaps the kids gave each other that emotional support.
Why do they stay together? Because they're the only people who actually share the same pain. They don't really know what's going on. They know it's not right. They know it hurts, but it's mum and dad.
As brothers and sisters, we loved each other and we wanted to stay together. And we knew and that if we had said anything, mum and dad would probably go to prison.
We knew we could survive as a family as long as we were together. Us children could survive together with mum and dad. We had grown so close through what we had went through. So we were willing to take whatever come to us to stick together.
As the abuse became a way of life for the West children, Fred and Rose were always on the lookout for other unwitting victims. Between 1973 and 1979, 9 young women were murdered at Cromwell Street. Most of these young women were unwilling sexual partners who the West had befriended or picked up in their car. But one girl was different, 18-year-old Shirley Robinson.
She's bisexual, which is part of their world, and she becomes pregnant by Fred. That's the big difference. Fred gets her pregnant.
Rose turned a blind eye to a lot of Fred's relationships, as did Fred with Rose. This was probably too much to bear. Shirley also boasted about marrying Fred. Well, now, that was certainly a taboo subject. Certainly didn't go down well with Rose, and that really spelt the end for Shirley.
There was already one Mrs. Fred West, and it seems that Rose had no intentions of being replaced.
She's too close to you. I don't like what you've done. She's got to go. Oh, no, no, she hasn't. Yes, she has. She goes or I go. Oh, all right. And it's that level of dismissive disposal. That's the part of it that is horrific.
Shirley Robinson was 8 months pregnant when she disappeared in May 1978. More than 15 years later, her remains were found in the garden of 25 Cromwell Street, along with the body of her unborn child. So Rose West's position as a matriarch of 25 Cromwell Street was once again secure. By 1980, she had given birth to 7 children, 4 of them Fred's.
Rose, she obviously had many sexual partners as well, and all the children weren't fathered by Fred. And to me, I kind of think, was she just breeding victims for him to have on tap? And that's an interesting side to her, that she didn't feel any maternal instinct to protect them.
In 1980, after suffering years of abuse, 15-year-old Anne-Marie left home to live with friends. 10-year-old Heather West was now the eldest child living at Cromwell Street and would become the focus of her parents' sadistic attentions.
Heather is the child of Fred and Rose. This is key. So this is Rose's own firstborn child. Pretty much what happened to Anne-Marie happened to Heather, i.e. she was raped. It seems Heather was more resistant and was obviously very unhappy about all that happened, and in fact expressed this unhappiness to friends.
What do you do when one of the children becomes difficult, becomes a problem? You know, she's objecting, she's leaving, she's going to be doing this. She is simply going beyond the pale. You kill her. Hence poor Heather.
It was in June 1987, 6 years after her stepsister Anne-Marie left home, that 16-year-old Heather West disappeared.
Rather like other victims, one day she's there, the next day she disappears. She's just not there anymore. And there is some cock and ball story about her going away to work in a holiday camp or something similar.
It would take 5 long years before social services seriously reviewed the disappearance of Heather West, and Gloucestershire Police began their investigation into Rose and Fred West.
Despite the investigation that took place to try and trace Heather, to see if she had been abused, she couldn't be found. Mrs. West,
where is Rose? Rose is asked about Heather many, many times. Where's your daughter? And she says, this is, I think, very important, she says at one stage to the police, oh, she, you know, she still keeps in touch, she rings up occasionally. Well, she couldn't have rung up occasionally because she was dead and she was buried under the patio.
We're now in what was the garden of Cromwell Street. So what happened when the diggers all arrived?
Well, the diggers moved in on a Thursday afternoon, I think it was. Rose was absolutely outraged. Mm. Fred's initial reaction was, well, they better put it back to how they found it.
Yes.
Believing that they wouldn't find anything. But then, of course, when he came home sometime later and saw the scale of the operation, yeah. He obviously knew that his number was up as far as Heather was concerned.
And then he confessed, didn't he?
He confessed to Heather, to Heather's murders, yeah. Pretty much straight away. Went to the police station and admitted killing his daughter.
When the remains of not one, but three other young women were discovered, Fred West admitted all three killings and identified the victims as Shirley Robinson, 15-year-old Alison Chambers, and his own daughter, Heather. Within a week of being arrested, Fred had confessed to the murders of nine other young women.
The police were in no doubt that Rose was involved right from the start. In fact, the only reason that Rose was allowed to remain on bail for so long was because Gloucestershire police were determined that they would have the case against Fred West absolutely watertight. But there was no doubt in anyone's mind that Rose was clearly complicit in the murders.
When Rose West was arrested in April 1994, she denied any involvement in the murders and blamed her husband, Fred.
Rose betrays him, basically, when she's arrested. She takes the view, against a logical view, this has been clever from her point of view. Fred did it all. Fred's a lunatic. I was an innocent victim of his mania all these years. She therefore severs contact with him. She doesn't write to him in prison, doesn't reply to his letters.
When Fred and Rose appeared in court together in December 1994, they hadn't seen each other in 6 months.
Fred was obviously delighted to see Rose, wanted to communicate as best he could. Rose, on the other hand, completely blanked him.
Fred went to touch Rose in the dock, and Rose kind of slanted her body away from him and completely ignored him. Fred was hurt by this, and I think this was the turning point, you know, he deteriorated after this.
Fred West was found dead in his cell on the 1st of January 1995. Despite being on suicide watch, he had hanged himself with knotted bedsheets.
There's no doubt that most people would say that Fred killed himself to protect Rose on the basis that if he was dead, the investigation would go away.
But the trial did go ahead, and despite the advice of her lawyers, Rose West decided to take the stand.
So she looked rather severe and matronly, and whoever was responsible for her wardrobe, whether it was inadvertent or what, I don't know, but it was a sort of dowdy black suit and heavy black cloggy shoes, and really all she needed was the pointed hat, the broomstick and the black cat.
She didn't appear to be an honest, innocent woman. She told lots of lies. She answered in a peculiar way that revealed her to be somebody who, certainly the jury, obviously, patently, took a great dislike to her from the start.
Caroline Owens testified against Rose West. She blamed herself for not speaking out against the West in 1972 and was determined to make amends.
I thought that was the only thing I could do to redeem myself for allowing them to die. When I got into the witness box, I thought, I've got to look the woman in the eye, I've got to look Rose in the eye, and not back down. And that's what I did. I just looked straight at her, and she looked at me, and then she just looked down at her lap. But it was hard, and it was painful, but I think it did go a long way to help him with the conviction. And first time in my life, I earned my own self-respect, so life changed.
In November 1995, Rose West was convicted of 10 counts of murder, including that of her own daughter, Heather. By her actions, Rose West has proved that it is possible for women to callously murder. But could Rose have become a serial killer through circumstance? Or could it be that she was just born that way? In 1995, she was convicted of the murders of 10 young women, including that of her own daughter, Heather. But what could have turned little Rosemary Letts into a cold, callous, sexually sadistic serial killer? There's a debate in psychology today about whether or not a person can be born with all the requirements needed to make them a deviant. So could Rose really have just been born bad?
I think Rose has already had the dice loaded against her in terms of inherited deficits. She showed clear signs of psychopathy, and when her explosive borderline rages took place, there was quite clearly a lack of empathy for others.
In my own personal opinion, is that you have a certain makeup when you're born, but it's the environment that you're in that influences and shapes who you become. And I really do think, you know, there's a fair amount of evidence to show now that what happens to you between the ages of 0 and 3 years old, you know, and your formative years has a huge impact on the person that you become.
From what I've learned, I think that Rose may have been abused as a child. And while abused children don't necessarily become abusers themselves, in this case, Rose did, with tragic consequences.
She used a psychological defence mechanism that we call identification with the aggressor. So her way of managing the unmanageable aspects, perhaps, of the neglect and the abuse are to become the abuser. In a way, if you can't beat them, join them.
You don't need to have a degree in psychology to realise that meeting Fred West had a profound effect on the teenage Rose. And I think her relationship with him is one of the most important aspects of her story.
Until she met Frederick West, she would be, in essence, a blank canvas, a person who has potential, intellectual potential, all sorts of different things. It's Frederick West who opens the door to the sadism, to the control, to the murder that's coming just around the corner. What he almost certainly hadn't counted upon, but must have been ecstatic about, is that she was able to carry that baton much further than he could have alone. And with two, they are able to bring people into their sphere of operations that previously he couldn't have got at.
Clearly, if you look at the entire relationship, Rose had taken on the role of her own father, who was strict, cruel, vicious, and highly dominant.
There's no doubt that Rose West had a difficult start in life and was groomed and encouraged to some extent by Fred. This is a woman who murdered her own daughter, her own flesh and blood. Are we just using Rose's background as an excuse for the fact that she ultimately chose her way of life? She chose to commit these truly appalling crimes.
At some stage, she decided that she better stay with Fred, stay in this secret murderous relationship, because she was in it already. I mean, she was already implicated because she'd killed Charmaine.
It's important to see both of the Wests as unique, rounded people. There is no simple explanatory excuse. You're looking at two people who certainly came from disadvantaged backgrounds, the same as thousands of others, who lived in a very ordinary domestic setting, the same as many others, but they chose so deliberately to go out and plan and take and destroy and murder these young women across decades. That's not usual, and that's not explained just by the sad happenstance of their backgrounds.
I don't deny that Rose West really did have an awful start in her life and some appalling things happened to her, but I just don't think that that can be used as an excuse for the terrible crimes she committed. I think there must be something inside Rose West that allowed her to do these awful things. Whether that's called evil or called something else, or it was something she was born with, I don't know. But from all my research over the years, I do know that an awful lot of people who are abused don't go on to become the abuser. I'm a crime writer, but even I would struggle to come up with a plot like the story of the Wests. But every good crime novel has a final twist, and the real-life story of Fred and Rose is no different. Fred and Rose had a career that lasted 25 years killing people, yet to me I find it very strange that there was an eight-year gap.
Certainly the killings that we know about seem to be clustered together, don't they?
Yeah.
Most people would speculate that they were still carrying on, they were still killing people during that period of time. Most experts would say serial killers don't normally stop.
I just can't see an eight-year gap. I think they enjoyed it too much, that they killed three girls in 1 year. I mean, that they tortured them sexually and mentally and physically. I can't see that happening just all of a sudden after they've already murdered.
I would be very surprised if you have silences in this way that go on for years. Remember, their repertoire isn't just abduction in this way, and their working ground isn't just Cromwell Street. It's wherever they happen to go. And I think one of the great policy judgments that the investigators had to deal with, and it's a very difficult thing to do, is when do you stop? When do you stop looking?
I personally think there's probably more, but whether there's two more or 20 more, I just don't know.
It's a chilling thought that this beautiful countryside could be concealing the unknown victims of Fred and Rosemary West. Women whose bodies have not yet been discovered and whose names we may never know.